Hello and welcome to Outdoors in Scotland. I'm John Burns and this is my wee podcast for folk who like the outdoors in Scotland and, well, pretty well anywhere else for that matter. One of the things I've not really thought about a lot really is the sounds of the outdoors. One of the sounds I most remember from my rock climbing days was when you're high in a crag and you hear the sound of a raven echoing about. And that's a really evocative sound. It certainly gives me plenty of adrenaline anyway. But I think the sounds that we hear in the wild are really, quite important. They create the atmosphere, and perhaps we're almost unconscious of them sometimes. My guest today is Neil Ansell. He's very interested in the sounds of the wild, and he's written a book on the edge of silence, which I'll sort of let him talk about. But I'll just bring him on. Hello, Neil. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks, John, and thanks for inviting me.
Oh, you're very welcome. You're very welcome. So you're a very experienced writer, and you've written for The Guardian, and you've been shortlisted for the Wainwright Golden Bear and the Hoel Hyland Book Prize. So quite an accomplished writer, really. This particular book, what inspired you to write on the edge of silence?
Well, for context, I've been hard of hearing all my life, and I now have progressive hearing loss. So I've basically lost my ability to hear most bird song because it's too high frequency for me. And I'm also losing my hearing at the bottom end of the range as well. So I'd sort of given up on sound as being an integral part of my experience while I'm out in the wilds. And, I've just sort of accepted that I've heard everything that I'm ever going to hear. And then one day I was out on the shore near my home here in the Western Highlands and watching the great northern divers. And one of them began to call. I don't know if you've heard them yourself, but it's the most extraordinary sound, very, very haunting. It's the loon of America. It's the same species. Our birds come in the winter from Iceland, and they have this incredible haunting call. And as I've sat there listening to them, I thought, actually, there are still some sounds of nature that are within my range, and there are some that I would love to hear and have never heard, mainly because these are species that are hard to reach. They live in remote places. And I thought I'd better get a wiggle on, basically, because my hearing is continuing to decline. I put together a wish list of bird calls that I would love to hear while I still can. And I spent a year pursuing those calls in journeys which took me all over the Highlands and Islands and beyond as well. Each chapter of my book is the pursuit of a particular call of a particular species. To hear these things, I had to get to the right place at the right time. These were often calls that were only made in the breeding season, and very often had to get very close as well. It was mostly a list of birds, although there were a couple of other animals which I included in my list. So that's the book. And I have to say, I was stunned by how successful I was, in how lucky I was, in that every species that I set out to hear, I did finally manage to hear, although sometimes with great difficulty. The journeys took me, I don't drive, so it involved lots of messing about on public transport and ferries and hitchhiking and wild camping. I spent about 30 nights wild camping all in all to try and reach the locations, the right locations at the right time, and to remain there until I heard what I'd come for.
Right. I mean, my experience of looking for wildlife is it doesn't really cooperate in my experience. And often you hear or you see things when you don't expect them. Well, what was the most difficult sound to track down then?
Well, I think some of these species, although they were very rare and very localized, were less difficult than you might think. It was more a matter of making the effort to be in the right place. So an example of that would be to hear the storm petrel, which has an incredible call on the nest. They nest, that's our smallest seabird, and they nest in rock piles and similar on remote islands. And the sound, I think I describe it as being like a ratchet going round in circles with the bird pressing the horn of a clown car with each revolution. Extraordinary. Okay. They come ashore after dark and they live on remote islands. So I went to the island of Mousa in the Shetlands, which is an uninhabited island. And there's several hundred pairs that nest in the ruins of the Broch of Mousa, which is the best preserved broch in the whole of Scotland. And yeah, you have to be there after dark on an uninhabited island. But that once you're there, they're very easy to hear. The ones which were slightly more difficult were those that are not so localized. So you can't just head to a colony and wait for them. It was species that are widely but thinly distributed. I think the best example of that perhaps would be the greenshank. There's about 1,000 pairs spread across the whole of the highlands. They don't really nest any further south. They live up in the hills and on peat hags right in the mountains. The call I was after was the song flight, which they only do when they exchange nesting duties. So you have to find a nesting site and be there overnight because they only change nesting duties at dusk and dawn. So twice a day. So they do like 12-hour shifts on the nest, the male and the female. And that's when they perform this display, which is absolutely extraordinary. I knew that they were present in the area in which I live because I see them on the shores in spring as they come back to breed. So I had to head out into the hills of Ardgour, which is near my home, and find what I thought was a suitable location and camp out there up in the hills by a mountain loch. And I was very lucky. I chose the right spot. And when I woke in my little tent at dawn, I could already hear one singing above me, and I was able to watch the display for about an hour over the nest site. And it's absolutely gorgeous and something that very few people get a chance to hear. And I think because they're so thinly distributed, it made it very, it made it feel like something very special. So there were species like that, and there were also some species which were very close to the edge of my range. For instance, the bittern, supposedly the loudest bird call, the booming of the bittern. Mm-hmm. And they only live in large reed beds. And for that, I went to England, to Morecambe Bay, Leighton Moss RSPB Reserve. And what I found was they were so close to the bottom limits of my range that I could only pick them up in one of my hearing aids. And it was almost not sound. It was more like, it felt like a vibration mm-hmm. in my hearing aid because it was so close to the bottom of my range. So perhaps it would be very loud for someone else, but I could only just capture it. It was so close. So I suspect that now, a year or so later, I would no longer be able to hear that at all. So I was just in time.
And are there places that people can hear these sounds on the net? If you wanted to without having to go to as extreme places as you've been, can folk hear these calls?
Yeah, you can go online and hear the calls of any bird if you have the relevant range.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just not the same, is it? It's not the same as being in place with the sound of a wild animal. It's the same way when you watch an otter fishing. It's not the same as seeing a photo of an otter.
No.
And it's the same with the sounds. It's the experience of having that in real life is totally different from that just listening to a recording. But of course, if you want to get an idea of what you're looking for, you can listen to an online recording so you know what to listen out for.
So you know what to expect, yeah, yeah. So you might actually, it sounds like not just, how can I put it, you travelling around looking for the birds that you wanted to hear and the calls you wanted to hear. It sounds like quite a journey, quite an adventure in a way.
Yeah, it was a very busy time because sometimes there was quite a short window of opportunity to hear particular things, and so I had to say go to the Isle of Col to hear the corncrakes for the short season for when the corncrakes call. So I had myself timed for the whole season, really. And that's not my normal practice. My normal thing that I do is I get up in the morning, look at the weather, think, okay, where shall I walk to today? Because I go out wandering every day. My habit normally is to get up early, do a couple of hours writing, and then head out walking for the day. And I just go where my feet take me. Typically I'll be out and about wandering every day. This was much more focused, so unusual for me, and I had to work out all the complexities of public transport. It's part of the nature of living in a place with quite a low population that the public transport can be very erratic. Yes. I mean, I found that some of the ferries to the islands would depart in the morning before the first bus got there and would get back after the last bus had gone. And so that would be an extra 2 nights camping, waiting for the ferry or so on and so forth. So there was a lot of logistical complications in the whole thing. But that was part of the fun of it in a way, because it made it into an adventure.
Oh, right. That's amazing. And so you've written quite a number of books. And are you writing something now?
I'm having a pause at the moment because I've been unwell for a while. I got Lyme disease from a tick bite.
Oh, right.
And then following that, I've had it's triggered a rheumatoid arthritis reaction. So I'm on quite a lot of medication. Sometimes I have a lot of pain and can't really do much. So I'll still go out for a short walk, but my ability to explore is in waiting at the moment before I can really go out on the sort of adventures that I like to write about. I mean, I do have spells when it's in abeyance. And so I think, okay, I'm feeling all right. I should get off up a mountain today. So I still do it, but I can't plan.
Right,
I can't really plan to go on a trip because I don't know when that time comes round whether I'll actually have the physical ability to do that. So it's just it's nature biting back, you could say, literally in this case.
Nature bit you back. That's very true, I'm afraid. And it's Ardgour you live, is that correct? Is that right?
Yeah, I live in Netherlock Harbour, so just across from Ardgour, but I'm near the ferry, so I spend most of my time walking in Ardgour and thereabouts, and also on the Netherlock Harbour side as well. So,
right, that's over the, is it, what's it, Connell Ferry, is it?
Yeah, I live right by the Connell Ferry. Yeah.
Ah, okay, I know exactly. Yeah. I spent many trips going over that ferry because I used to go to Abothie quite a lot on the Artornish estate, you know. And again, and you can get to Mull fairly easily from where you are then.
You can, but again, the public transport is very sketchy. It's like one bus a day to Loch Allen for the ferry. I did head over to Mull not long ago. I went for the book festival in Tobermory. So I do go further afield. I have a couple of friends locally who will say, hey, do you fancy a trip to up down to the end of the Ardnamurchan Peninsula? And I'll say, yeah, let's go. So I do get driven around, but especially once you get to the rough bounds of Loch Harbour, to Ardgour and Ardnamurchan and so on, the buses are basically one a day each way. And often it's the wrong way for me. So
you can't
do it without a night out, basically. I was just going to say, you go out in the evening on a bus, and the bus back is in the mornings, first thing in the morning.
So
you have to camp out or stay in a bothy. I mean, there are a few bothies that stay in from time to time.
Yeah. There's a lot of bothies around there. Yeah. Oh, great. And is there anything that you're planning to do? Is there any great project that you're looking to work on, or are you just going to take it as it comes now?
I'm going to take it as it comes. I'm planning a trip very soon to the Isle of Islay for the wintering waterfowl. It's the biggest gathering of barnacle geese and Loch Groon out there. I think there's 35,000 barnacle geese. So I want to be there to see them flying in at dusk. I think that would be a very exciting wildlife experience, both visually and in terms of sound as well. So
Sounds amazing.
I'm still collecting sounds, even though I'm not going to write a second book about the sound of nature, but I've gathered up a whole load more since.
That's great.
It's changed my whole worldview about what being in nature is about, because I've always been very, very visual in my approach, because my eyesight's very good and my hearing's very poor. Focusing a little more on sounds of nature really does amplify your experience of the natural world. I feel like it's now something integral for me, even though I was taking on a challenge which was playing to my weaknesses rather than my strength, in terms of the sounds of nature. I think it really has added to my appreciation of the natural world. And also, although as my hearing continues to deteriorate, I will be able to hear gradually less and less, I do now have this sort of library of sounds in my mind, I can recall the sound that I heard that I might not be able to hear now, and think, I remember that time. What I can remember where I was, what the experience was like, what the weather was like. So it brings back a whole package of the experience of interacting with that wild animal. So it's like this little library in my mind that I've now got that I'll keep even when I can't reenact it.
No, that's fascinating. Well, I hope you continue to put more books and more experiences in your library. I'm sure you will. You've got plenty to do. But it's fascinating listening to you. So that's Neil Anson talking about his book, On the Edge of Silence. That's been fascinating. Thank you very much for talking to us. And maybe I'll bump into you in Waterstones again.
Maybe I do turn up in Inverness from time to time.
Okay.
On the bus, obviously. On the
obviously,
bus.
Yeah, okay. Neil Anson, thank you very much for talking to me. And I'll put links to your books on the podcast page. All the very best. Thank you. Thanks for talking.
Thanks very much, John, for inviting me. And good luck with your writing as well. I know you're a very productive writer. Yeah, I think you're a bit quicker than me, I think.
It doesn't feel that way.
I've written 5 books in 15 years. It takes me about 3 years to get my act together.
Okay.
So good luck. And
thank you. Take care. Well, that was Neil Anson talking about his latest book, On the Edge of Silence, and his previous books include The Last Wilderness, Deep Country, and The Circling Sky. Well, we were talking about the sounds of birds and the calls they make, and I thought, well, this is an audio podcast, so, you know, maybe we should finish with one. So here is the call of the Great Northern Diver.